Ethnically Ambiguous is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows. Hi, Shereen.
Hi, Anna. How are you?
Good.
Okay, cool. Today...
Should we say this is Ethnically Ambiguous?
Yeah, this is Ethnically Ambiguous, and today we are joined by a very special guest, Karama Donkwa. She's here. Did I say it right? Thumbs up. She's giving me a thumbs up. Great. We talk about her very interesting history where she how many different places? Have you ever counted?
I know it was 9 schools, but I don't know how many places.
It's there a very interesting upbringing. Her mom is a writer. She's a writer. She hosts the Popcorn Book Club on iHeartRadio. We talk about her move to LA and everything she's up to. It's a really good conversation.
Yeah, we also talk a lot about identity politics. Let me tell you, what an episode. So stay tuned.
Who are we? Where do we come from? Who do we become? What is it to be? What to be is it? Where are we? Who are my parents? Where are my pants? Why were we born? We are Ethnically Ambiguous.
Hi, Shereen.
Hi. Sorry, I made myself laugh with my missed out fire hello. Hi, Anna. How are you today?
Good. How are you doing?
You know, I'm excited to talk to our guest today. We both, actually, I shouldn't assume, but I met her for the first time during a Twilight live reading that we both were on with Bechdel cast.
Yeah, I met her as well, that same reading.
And she was a light, a joy to talk to and to read with. Electric. But yeah, I'm excited to talk to our guest. I know that I just jumped right into doing that, but instead of having our usual back and forth banter, but I'm just overwhelmed with excitement.
That's understandable. Yes, we have a great guest. You might know her from her writing. You might know her from her educating, if you will. You might know her from a podcast on iHeartRadio called Popcorn Book Club. You might know her from that Twilight reading that you watched us do. We have Karama Donkwa on the show.
Donkwa.
It is Donkwa, yes. No, it's fine. The worst mispronunciation of my name that I've ever heard was in like 2008, and no one will ever top it. So I just don't want anyone to ever stress about it.
What did they say?
Yeah, I'm curious.
I was at a track meet because I did track and field in high school, which no one who looks at me would ever think, yeah, that's an athlete, just from like the way I stand. I'm like, don't look at me. I have no body. But they pronounced my name Arama Dosh.
What?
None of those letters make sense with the way that my name is spelled. So it was truly a miracle.
That's like what did John Travolta call Idina Menzel?
Adele Dazeem.
Yeah, that's like that. Yeah. That's like that one. That's like where did those letters come from?
It's like, I mean, I feel like a lot of dyslexic folks sometimes have, they'll see the word, but then it'll just completely, and I have a little bit of dyslexia, so sometimes I'll be looking at something and it'll just look so different in my mind than what I'm looking at down at the paper. Like, I remember growing up, I could never figure out how to spell it Carolina, like South or North Carolina. Like, I could never, I don't know, I just never was able to, I would always write it like Carlina or something. It was so weird. And I could never figure out why. And then, you know, later on they were like, well, you have a little bit of dyslexia. You see things incorrectly and it doesn't compute.
I think some people obviously like have dyslexia. I think other people are just lazy. Like, I have had so many nurses and doctors look at a paper and I know it's me and they say Sharon. I'm like, no, there's no A, there's no O. You just saw a name with an SH and an N at the end and you're like, there's one way this could sound. So I think people need, like, some people that don't have an actual impairment, they don't have an excuse either.
Yeah, I think that there are some people who get nervous, I think. Mm. They're like, I will try and tailor this to a thing I already know. Yeah. That looks enough like Sharon that maybe.
Yeah. I hate the name Sharon. Sorry, nothing against Sharons, but I'm just not one of you.
I've gotten Carmen a few times and I'm like, nope.
I like Carmen. Carmen San Diego.
Yeah, no. Carmen as a name is great. It's just not mine.
Right, exactly. Oh, you're right. You're right. You're right. Sorry. Same with me and Sharon.
Yeah.
But okay, let's rewind. So other than you being one of the only things I might know about you at this point is that you love Twilight.
I do, and that's embarrassing, and like, no, I don't want adorable. That to be the only thing people know about me, so well, that's hurry why up you're and here. Ask me a question.
That's why you're here. We're going to learn all about you. Let's start with where you were born and where you grew up.
Okay, so we're starting with the hard questions. Great. So there are two ways I can answer this question. I can answer it simply, or I can answer it honestly. So I'm going to answer it honestly.
Please.
I appreciate that.
So I was born in Los Angeles. Whoop, whoop. I am born and somewhat bred Angeleno, but I moved around a lot growing up. So I lived in LA until I was 5. And then I moved to DC for like half a year, the second half of kindergarten. And it's easy for me to like relate it by grades because that's mm-hmm. all you can think of when you're a kid. You're like, I'm finally in fifth grade. Woohoo! I'm a big kid. But I moved back to LA for first, second, and third grade. And then I moved abroad to Ghana for fourth grade. And then I moved back to the States and back to LA for fifth grade.
Wow.
And I lived in Washington, D.C. again in sixth grade. For the first part of seventh grade, I went to a boarding school in Pennsylvania, rural Pennsylvania, not like the fun parts of Pennsylvania, the like racist parts. And then I left that school because it was racist and came back to California to finish out seventh grade, then moved back to Ghana for eighth and ninth grade, came back to the States and did 10th, 11th, and 12th grade at a boarding school in Virginia, the like rural part of Northern Virginia. So also vaguely racist, but not as racist as like a Charlottesville. So it's like racist light. Mm-hmm. And then I did college in Rhode Island and then came back to Los Angeles after I was done. And I was like, I never want to leave California ever again.
Holy now, shit.
Explain to us what your parents do, which would lead them to hop around so much.
So I grew up living with my mom. I know who my dad is. When I was a kid, a lot people would ask me like, do you know your dad? Which was very racist. And I didn't know then that it was racist. Cause I'm like,
wow,
I know my outright, dad.
What a blatantly racist, stupid question that you don't
like
even...
other children, too. Not adults. Other children.
Wow.
Yeah.
That is appalling. And not even that him. Surprising. But if I'm really thinking about it, a lot of kids are probably just regurgitating questions that their parents have.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely.
But yeah, but what did your mom do?
So my mom's a writer. So anywhere she has an internet connection and a laptop computer, she can live. So that is one of the reasons we kind of bounced around a lot. Some of it was financial decisions and some of it was like social decisions. So, you know, you'll notice that I moved to Ghana right after I had gone to the racist boarding school in Pennsylvania because my mom wanted me to live in a place where I was the majority.
Wow. I mean, yeah, she has a point.
That's cool.
But I mean, that is, yeah, I didn't expect you to say writer. I think that's really fascinating. I think when you hear, I mean, I think out of all the guests we've ever had, you probably have the most complicated, moving history I've ever heard.
I'm curious what led her to put you in boarding school in those different places.
Well, it's a very Ghanaian thing to put your kids in boarding school. So both of my parents are from Ghana and both of my parents did go to boarding school.
Oh.
And I think both of my mom's parents went to boarding school as well. I'm not sure about my dad's parents because I don't know them. Yeah. His mom died when he was a teenager, so I never met her. And I did not ever get to meet my paternal grandfather before he passed away because I hadn't been to Ghana when he passed away when I was like 8, I think.
Oh, yeah. I was going to ask, in your mom's decisions to move around within the States, did you have, did she have family or friends in these areas or was it purely just like exploring?
Yeah. So mostly it was the Washington, D.C. area. So my mom moved to the States when she was 6 years old and she grew up in the D.C., Maryland, Virginia area. And so I went to boarding school in Virginia because that's the school my mom went to. So I went to the same high school as my mom. Cool. She didn't graduate from there. She went to two different high schools like I did, samesies. Mm-hmm. And she went there for, I think, her freshman and sophomore year. And I went there for my sophomore, junior, and senior years. So I did graduate from there.
Interesting. I didn't know that was like a Ghanaian thing to like go to boarding school.
Well, it's a Ghanaian thing because it's a British thing. So it's colonialism.
Got it. That makes sense. It's all coming together.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yep.
Yeah. I mean, I want to get into Popcorn Book Club a little bit later, but I do love your mom being a writer, back history of all of that. I think, did her being a writer, did that influence you being creative growing up, or like knowing that you can pursue like something creative in your life?
Yes and no. I like did not like writing when I was a kid. I was like, I never want to write. Writing is yucky. My mom does that. Gross. So I was very reluctant to write initially. And I was like, no, push against it. And then I think when I was in college, eventually, I think late high school and college is when it was like, surprise, you're a writer. It's in you. It won't stop. But yeah, I majored in theater in college, which is only something that I could do because my mom is a writer. My dad is a lawyer and was like, don't you want to do something more lucrative and practical? And I'm like, mm-hmm. I'm sorry, the people on Friends got $1 million an episode in the last several seasons. So what are you asking me? I could be on Friends. I want that Friends money. So it did influence me in terms of like, I did have support that a lot of people in this field don't have from mm-hmm. my family. So like mostly my mom, everybody else in my family is like, you're going to an Ivy League school. Why would you study theater? There are so many things. You could be a doctor, you could be an engineer, you could be a lawyer. That's so many things.
The main three, the top three professions: doctor, lawyer, engineer.
There are four things you can be: doctor, lawyer, engineer, failure. So
I thought you were gonna say pharmacist, because technically pharmacist counts.
No,
it's close enough to doctor. Yes, it is.
In doctor,
yeah, okay, they will accept pharmacist because you make a lot of money as a pharmacist.
Yeah, I think pharmacists and dentists are like the second tier of doctor that immigrants will accept.
But I think you make more money as a pharmacist based off my father yelling at my face, telling me these facts that could not possibly be true. Who knows?
I do think it's also fun, like for me, this is amusing that you're, before we started, we asked you how you pronounce your name and you said Karama rhymes with drama. You were a fucking drama kid in addition to that rhyme.
I was a drama kid. I really
That's
was.
Perfect. That's perfect.
I did all the theater things and like, I make dumb theater kid jokes. And like, even now on TikTok, I live for like drama kid roasts on TikTok. They are my favorite thing. Like whenever somebody's like, this is what it's like off stage and this is what it's like on stage, I'm like, oh, that's so us. Oh, look at us. Definitely a drama kid. Studied theater, was in drama club in high school, did chorale in high school, which was the equivalent of glee club at my school.
We didn't have that. We never had a glee club. So when Glee, the show, came about, I was like, what is this? Like, I was so confused with the concept of like a musical thing. But I don't know. It's not for me, but I respect the hustle.
The glee.
Thank you.
I do want to ask, I'm curious, what was your mom writing? Like, what does your mom write?
Oh, so plugging my mom. So my mom does literary nonfiction. She writes creative essays and memoir, stuff like that. And she wrote a book called Willow Weep For Me, A Black Woman's Journey Through Depression. And it is a memoir about her experience with depression as a Black woman in the United States. So it is very intersectional and talks about mental health and race and how those things are connected. And it is still very relevant, even though I think it came out in like the late 90s. And I don't think anybody else has really tackled that particular intersection of like race, gender, and mental health. And she's a BAMF, basically.
Yeah, I'm obsessed. BAMF. That's amazing.
Yeah, she has a book coming out in December that it's an anthology that she edited that digs into like her hometown, Accra, which is where she was born in Ghana. And it's a noir series. So it's called Accra Noir. And you should get my mom's book. Thank you.
You should get her on this podcast.
Please do. I think she would love that. She would be so psyched.
I think being like a, for lack of a better word, like pioneer and like that genre of book or like genre of writing is really important, especially now that we're like just in this I don't know, like everything is coming to a head. Like all this upheaval, there's a reason why it's happening. It's just been happening for a long time.
It's all happening. And it's just like, I don't know what planets are doing what, but everything is colliding. And I should know what planets are doing what. I have like 4 astrology apps on my phone. I just opened another one if I don't like what the first one said.
Mm-hmm. But
that's how you do it.
I really love that your mom wrote about those topics. Mm-hmm. I also, not to like project, but I assume that being around a writer talking about these things trickles down to you, you know, like it trickles down to you kind of accepting not only writing, but also being open and vulnerable with yourself and like honest about how you feel. Am I projecting and like hoping for the best, or like, is that true?
No, you are spot on. And like, my mom is like very encouraging about therapy. And I know a lot of people with immigrant parents are not. No. And like, my mom did move here when she was very young. So she doesn't have a discernible foreign accent. She sounds exactly like me, like indistinguishable on the phone. But she was not allowed to speak English in the house. She was not allowed to eat American food in the house. So she had a very like insular, you are Ghanaian, you are not American, you are not like them upbringing. So it could have been very easy for her to sort of lean that way with me, but she didn't. And she is great and the best type of immigrant parent in the world, who's like, hey, so this is your culture and this is where you come from, but also like, you're your own person and take these things and shape them how you'd like.
Yes. That is so ideal.
Yeah.
It truly is. My dad is less like that. My dad is much less like that, which is why talking to him usually gives me a stomach ache. I'm like Chidi Anagonye from The Good Place. I'm just like, oh no, my stomach hurts.
Right. I mean, it does make you think that like the stricter parents are with a child, like whether like your mom's parents, for example, that usually, not all the time, but there's usually some type of rebellion or like stray from the norm kind of thing there, you know, like your attempts to control or to like stifle a child. Not, I mean, those are pretty harsh words, but like, I think rebellion is implied. Yeah. So good for your mom for kind of being true to herself and literally becoming like a badass writer. Like that is, what a badass.
Yeah, I love my mom so much. I think she's the coolest. I live with her right now. I moved in with her during the pandemic. So
goals.
Good for I've been you. Here for like 7 months now, which is fun. The house is big enough that it's a positive experience.
Yeah. Is she also in LA?
So I moved out of LA to the Coachella Valley, which is where she's been living the past couple of years. But she did live in LA up until about 2 years ago. But she's never lived anywhere, I think, longer than 3 years.
Oh, wow.
Ooh, interesting. So she
at a time.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I could tell by the way that you grew up that you jumped around all over the place. I mean,
where
takes,
will she
takes
go
a certain
next?
Kind of person for that.
I don't know if she'd want me to say on the air where she'll go next. I think that give she us wants her to location. Surprise people.
Where?
Send us a pen.
How did your parents meet?
That is a good question. So my understanding of how my parents met, they met in Los Angeles, which I think is wild because like there are various ethnic groups within Ghana and they are the same one. They're like from, Ghana has 10 different regions, and the greater Accra region is the one that most people will visit if they ever go to Ghana, because it's where Accra, the capital city, is. And some people will go to the central region, which is where Cape Coast is, which is where one of the largest slave castles in the in West Africa is, the Cape Coast Castle. But they're both like ethnically from the eastern region. So it's like if you had parents that were both from like Cleveland and they met each other in like Antarctica. Like there's or Antarctica has fewer people than Los Angeles, but they like met each other in like Paris and they just happen to both be from Cleveland. So I think that's really funny that they're like so ethnically similar from the same country. And they were like, yep, we're gonna have a baby. So they met through a friend, my Auntie Lucille. Auntie in the way that, you know, brown people be saying auntie, even though they're not related.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, that's cool. I mean, and surreal, like, I feel like watching, like, what was that show that was, like, somewhat problematic, but also very interesting? Indian Matchmaker how like they go out of their way to just try and find people. And that is very common in like Middle Eastern culture to want to marry someone that's like either like Muslim or like, you know, in India, it's like it's rare that you would have like an Hindu and Muslim marriage. Like it's, you almost have to like come to an agreement within the family to be able to do that. There's so many different, you know, it's all like colorism, politics, social, economic divide, everything. There's so many levels of shit going on that it's, it's like your parents were like, oh, perfect.
Yeah.
Like, but like it was a total accident. Yeah. My mom would not care about that. And I don't think my dad would care about that either, because he's currently married to a Black American from Chicago.
Okay.
So like, and my ex-stepmom, who is his last wife, is half Lebanese and half Ghanaian. Ooh. Which is a common combination.
It's really? Wait, how? Yeah. I mean, not a lot of Lebanese people so in Ghana. But really?
I think a lot of people, like, I think the Middle East is a lot of people leave and then you just go where you, I mean, but I have, there was, well, this is, I should check my facts before I say anything, but I know there was a lot of my family, not a lot, there was a weird sect of my family that left Iran and went to Africa because they were like,
Not Egypt, Africa, like other parts of Africa. Like, I don't know why I just assume like North Africa is like kind of where a lot of Arabs would go to, but it's so interesting that like
I think they started in North Africa everywhere. And then slowly trickled down. I don't know the exact locations right now because they're kind of, you know, there's always that family that you're like, oh, and that's your uncle, but we don't talk to him. And you're like, okay, whatever.
Yes.
Yeah. Some weird.
It's always the forbidden uncle, the wrong uncle.
Yeah, exactly. It's always like the uncle who, he said something weird that one time and everyone decided they don't like him. And it's like, that's nonsense and you know it, but okay.
I'm that person. I think I'm like the bad cousin. I don't know. No one talks to me.
I mean, I'm for sure the bad cousin. I was the first one to get tattoos. I was the first one to do a lot of things. I corrupted everybody. But we'll take a quick commercial break before we get into more corruption. We'll be right back. And we're back. Before we left, we were talking about how no one talks to you. Why do you think no one talks to you and your family?
I think it's because no one makes me talk to anybody. I think that's also part of it. And that my mom is like, you don't have to talk to those people if you don't like them. Like, I didn't talk to my dad for a really long time because of like drama. And my mom was like, I mean, I think that you should at a certain point forgive your father because it's going to do you more good to like try and pursue a relationship with your father on your own terms. But if you feel like he's been hurtful to you, you're not required to speak to him. Like, my mom never kept me from talking to my dad when I was growing up. My mom made an effort to make sure that I regularly talked to my dad. And when I decided I didn't want to, she was like, that's fine. There was like a certain point where she was like, call your dad because he's about to have surgery. But like, that's it.
Wow. Yeah. Your mom is so like next level.
Seriously.
Yeah.
Icon.
Truly. She's the GOAT. She's a BAMP. She's the GOAT. All the acronyms. Are those acronyms or initialisms? I know those two acronyms are different things. Okay.
Wait, what's the other one? I never even heard of that one.
One of them is where you say the letters, and the other one is where you say a word from the letters.
Initialism is the other thing?
I don't
never
know
heard
which
of
one's which, though. It's like stalactites and stalagmites, because I don't know. Because people use acronym kind of ubiquitously for both
of
them.
Right.
But one of them is different.
Well, Karama, in all fairness, you are the writer out of all of us. So
I should know. I know they both exist. And the thing about being a writer, I think people think that you know a lot of things about words, but it's just that you take more time to Google and double check that you know what it is before you do it. It's like, do I know what a stalactite is? Do I know what a stalagmite is? What's this word? Does this mean what I think it means? Mm-hmm. How do
I pronounce teasing. This? I was just teasing. I'm fluent in English and I can't pronounce anything right. So, or read or anything.
Same.
Yeah. But okay. So you studied theater in college.
Yes. Theater arts with an R-E.
R-E. Oh my God.
In theater. No. It's hotly debated in the community.
Versus
because,
theater.
Well, because a theater with an E-R is like the place, right? Is that like what the distinction is? Like the
There is no
actual
distinction.
Building?
It's stupid and doesn't make any sense. Like, I've worked for various theater companies in Los Angeles. And like, I worked as a telemarketer for a couple of different theaters. So I would sell season tickets as my day job as an actor. I would sell season tickets for theaters. And I worked for a company that had the word theater in its name with an ER. But but the company that I would sell tickets for through that company used RE. And I'm just like, what do you want from me? There is no consensus here.
Yeah.
But I worked for another theater that was RE, and it's just, it's messy. And I want us all to come to a decision. Like, when we can have meetings again, we all just need to go see Wicked and then afterwards get drinks and decide what we're gonna do.
Right.
Theater.
It's like an attempt to be like European, I feel like. It's like using the U in color. You know what I mean? It's like, you're trying so hard to be fancy here. Just commit.
There's such a funny SNL sketch where
Aidy Bryant. color. I've seen that. That's
every
so
time
good.
I see color with a U now, I'm like, couleur, labour.
Yeah, that's a really good one.
Yeah.
She shines in that. But
truly
okay,
an icon.
That's one of like the most random but hilarious sketches on SNL.
Well, that's real paint. Did you know that? Because I didn't know that when I watched it. Farrow and Ball is a real paint company, and their paint is actually that expensive.
Farrow and Ball is very expensive. What you do is you find the Farrow and Ball shade, then you take it to a cheaper one and ask them to recreate that shade. That's the trick. Learn that from Arden Marine.
I had no idea that was a real paint thing. Also, genius Arden, of course
very
you would know that.
Bougie paint.
Well, yeah, in the sketch, they were like making fun of it being like over $100 a bucket or some shit.
Yeah.
Or a gallon or whatever. But now that I know it's real, wow. Anyone that's watching or listening to this, please look up the SNL skit with, I think it might be called, I don't know what it's called, but Kristen Stewart is the guest.
I think it's called Farrow and Ball, which is the name of the paint company.
Kristen Stewart is the guest, but the star of the show in this regard is Aidy for sure.
Kristen Stewart, who was in Twilight,
Oh yeah, look at that, connections.
All over the place.
But okay, I want to rewind. You're in college, studying theater with an RE.
Yes.
What do you do after that? Because you're selling tickets, you have a job or whatever. Like, what do you do now? Like, what do you have any plans?
Well, here's the thing, and I don't know if this is going to be a controversial stance or not, but like, if you want to be a screen actor in Los Angeles, you don't need a theater degree. And I'm glad that I got one because I care deeply about like the history of theater, the historiography of theater, all of that. And like, I'm glad that I got that knowledge of theater as an art and as a practice and performance theory and like reading Richard Schechner, who is like a big deal if you know performance theory, but like it has no bearing on my day-to-day life auditioning for commercials where they're like, can you bite into this Kaiser roll and smile? And I'm like, cool, yeah, I can do that.
Yeah.
Which is its own skill set that you still need training for. I don't think anybody can walk into an audition and book it and then continue to build a career without any training, but it is not the same thing at all.
Yeah.
What was interesting in college, I had a friend who had an ex who was going to go to a class that she was also going to take. So she texted me and asked, can you sit next to me? So that I don't want to say his name because I'm still chill with everybody involved. But
yeah.
I think if he hears this, he'll know it's him. But so let's call him Mike because most white guys are named Mike. So can you sit next to me so that Mike won't sit next to me in this class? And it was an education class called The Craft of Teaching. And that really changed my life. And I was like, oh, this is super cool. And I actually took it and then took more education classes and did some work in public schools in Providence and then started working in youth-oriented nonprofits after I graduated from college. And I was still doing theater stuff, but like youth-oriented nonprofit has kind of been a world that I've also been engaging in to some level, at least part-time, since I graduated from college almost 10 years ago.
Wow.
Not almost 10 years ago. Like, I don't want to make myself sound older than I am. But
no,
like,
age doesn't matter here. Come on.
I'm still an actor.
No, the reason why I said whoa wasn't the 10 years thing. The reason why I said whoa was like, that's a really admirable pivot that you did, you know, like, yeah.
And it was always there even with the theater. So the summer after my sophomore year, I did a program that we had there. It was like a three-pronged program where they had summer stock theater that was being done by professional actors. And then they had a program for college age students, most of whom came from Brown, which is where I went to school, and some that came from other colleges. And it was called Theater Apprentice Program. And then, so the theater apprentices worked on the professional shows in some capacity. So like I did run crew and assistant stage managed for one show. And then I did, the next year I assistant directed a show because I had connections in the program. And then there was something called the Theater Bridge Program, which was the high school version of the Theater Apprentice. So they did mentorship with the college students. So I had a bunch of like little mentees that were high school students, which is weird because I ran into one in a bar in Los Angeles a couple years ago. He was the bartender. And whoa. I was just like, Mike, that's not his name either, but they're all named Mike now. Yeah. I was like, Mike, what are you doing here? You're a child. And he's like, I'm 24. What are you talking about? And I just wanted to faint. And he did not remember me at first. I remembered him first. And I was like, I know your face. And he was like, what? No. And I was like, your name's Mike. And he was like, how did you know that my name is Mike? And I was like, because it's me. And he was like, oh my God. And then he said my name wrong. And I was like, nope, almost.
Yeah.
But yeah, so it was like always there. And I like taught kids improv when I was a summer RA. So it was always like a combination of like theater and writing and teaching. And I like teach creative writing now. Mm-hmm.
Wow. I mean, it is weird, isn't it? When you see someone that you like think was, or you knew them as a child and then they're like a full grown adult and they've moved to LA and they're like, I'm trying to do something too. And you're like, of course you are.
And he was like in a movie. He was in a movie with Ben Affleck. Oh. So like he's doing okay. He's doing, I don't want to say he's doing better than me because compare and despair, don't want to do that. Right. And he's a white man. So our careers are going to be different.
He's a white man named Mike, you know, already a leg up here.
Yeah. So when do you make it back out to LA?
Oh, immediately. I immediately went back out to LA. There was a lot of like fear on my part. My mom was like very supportive. Uh-huh. And like was like, I will help you pay your rent at the beginning and I will help you find a job. So like I have a lot of privilege in that instance where like my mom has been super supportive of me both financially and emotionally in a lot of ways, which is kind of how most people that are successful end up being successful because they have that financial and emotional support. So I come back like 2 weeks after I graduate or something like that. I put most of my crap on a train from Providence to Los Angeles and I beat it out here. And then I was like living in an apartment and trying to like be a grown up, which was terrifying. But it took me a minute before I like got an agent, and then it took me a minute before I got an agent that I liked. but I've since like I'm SAG now, which is super cool. Woo. And I've done like a bunch of national campaigns for ads commercially. I was in a show, I did a co-star on a show on Netflix recently, which was super cool. And then the pandemic happened. Yay.
What was the show that you did, the co-star?
On My Block.
Oh, I didn't know that. Oh,
yeah, I was so in season three, episode six.
That's awesome.
I played an assistant director, which is really funny because like when I was little, I didn't realize that the people on screen that were like jobs were actually not those jobs. Like in Kenan and Kel, they had the stage manager that was like, you need to get on stage right now. And I thought that that was their actual stage manager and not an actor. And like now I get to be that for some child.
Yeah.
Which is sweet.
That is pretty sweet.
That's true. You're right. It's not. They don't do that. What if I just
it's learned? It's all like a fake documentary.
They don't do that.
And his mind is blown.
Yeah, no, I knew that.
It was like 3 years ago when I realized. So you're not far behind.
No,
I was like a grown adult when I was sitting there. And I was like, wait a second, that dude was an actor.
Wow.
That's crazy. No, I was acting and should have realized, of course, that's an actor. I am just like massively dumb. I'm very intelligent, but I'm so dumb.
No, you're not dumb.
I think that intelligence and like smarts are different things. And I consider myself to be kind of slow on the uptake on some things.
Yeah. I think I'm the same way. I'm like smart. I'm like intuitive, but I can also be very dumb. Like you can explain something to me and I'll just be like, I don't get it. Like I just don't get it. Like certain things, I mean, maybe it's also that dyslexia I mentioned earlier, but like there's things that just do not connect. Like my boyfriend will say something and he'll like ask me a question and I'll just be like, I don't understand the connection. And then he'll explain it and I'll be like, oh, that's like really simple. Huh? That's not good. That's not good that I did not understand that. Like, I don't know. I don't know what it is.
I was in an elevator with my mom once and like we pressed the button and I was like, it's called an elevator because it elevates you. and my mom just looked at me with such shame and disappointment.
Wait.
Classic.
What?
It elevates. It's like,
it elevates you.
Okay, I've never thought of that in my life. I
think about it.
Well, British people call it a lift, which I feel like is more of a direct connection.
Okay, well, you've blown my mind with elevator. Also reminds me of that one time as a full-blown adult, I realized that deodorant was like to D-O, because I had a really hard time spelling deodorant when I was growing up, and I finally realized it was D-odor.
Honest, mine is blown.
A lot of mistakes I make is because I learned English second, but... This is something like, but I also think some things similar to Anna or Anna is like, some things just don't compute. Like someone can explain something to me. Like chemistry was like that for me. Like I thought for a while I wanted to be a psychiatrist when I was in high school because I was severely depressed. And I was like, I want to explore mentally ill people just like me. And then I could not understand for the life of me chemistry. And I failed the AP test. And I was like, maybe not. But it also makes me think of, my one last little story about not computing things. Okay, you know those signs? This is back to being English second language thing. Those signs on the freeway that have a picture of a plane and they say speed enforced by radar. Or like something like that. So every time I would see that, I thought that meant literally until I was like 23, like, or even 22 in college. I thought that meant a plane flying over you means your car is going to go fast, so please be careful here.
Like, I thought English was not the first language you learned, why you would think that.
I thought it was like speed enforced by aircraft, so like there's going to be a plane and your car is going to go faster because of the
I don't know, Shereen, that checks out to me. So
I felt so dumb when my friend was like, wait, what? Like... It was like, it was those moments that you get exposed and it's so humiliating.
It's like, be careful. The speed is enforced by radar. Yeah, exactly. They're like, wait, what are you saying?
Yeah.
I love those moments. They're just so, they bring you together with your
family. Can I really do? Sure.
Can I tell you one that I just had like literally the other day?
Mm-hmm.
I didn't realize that Dharma and from Dharma and Greg and Jenna Elfman were the same person, even though that's where she got her career start. And I was doing one of those things that was like, all these actors and actresses are the same people. And I was like, talking to a friend, I was like, and the girl Dharma from Dharma and Greg and Jenna Elfman, they look exactly the same. And my friend was like, that's Jenna Elfman. And I was like, okay, I'm not good at this. I'm like, and you know, that guy, Matt Damon, looks like that guy from Good Will Hunting, right? Or, you know, like, exactly. That's like who I am. I have no idea. Like, every person, like, that's not the same person? Or that is the same person?
Remember when me and you, we had that whole bit about There Will Be Blood and the other movie being the exact same movie?
Oh,
and
yes.
There Will Be Blood. No Country for Old Men?
Yes, exactly. Same movie. Same movie in my mind.
I've never seen either of them, and I will not see them, but they are the same movie.
That's same for movie. Longest time. Josh Brolin, Daniel Day-Lewis, same person in my mind.
Yep.
I was like,
that. They don't look
There's
alike.
There's no difference between these two white male actors.
They don't need to look alike to be the same person.
No.
True. Very true.
Same aesthetic, kind of angry. There might be some yelling involved. Brown hair. Same guy. That's all it takes.
That was so validating. The minute the fact that you said that movie immediately is so validating.
I knew. Yeah. No, they're the same movie. They're the same. I am with you both.
Yeah. I think. I think I relate to you. I went to college. That's how we were me and Anna met. But I don't think I needed to have a film degree to be a filmmaker. I think it's kind of useless in retrospect. I kind of wish I would have moved here and had like more hands-on experience. But. Mm-hmm. I do think there's something implied. Like, I don't know that much about, like, Americana film. You know what I mean? Like, I don't really...
Yeah.
The first Woody Allen film I watched, I was, like, in my 20s. Like, I didn't grow up like I watched Seinfeld for the first time this year kind of thing. Like mm-hmm. American stuff kind of went over my head. But
how
I
does
think,
that hold up now? That's kind of my question. Like, how does Seinfeld hold up as a 21st
I just posted a tweet about
show?
It today because I finished yesterday. But my tweet was, not that I'm plugging my Twitter, but whatever, follow me. it was, I finally watched all of Seinfeld. Now I'll finally understand every joke every straight white guy makes.
Nice, true.
For every reference. Mm-hmm. But I will say, when it's good, it's really good. Like, there are really funny stuff. I like Larry David, and I know that he had, like, what the episodes that he wrote were really funny. Mm-hmm. And not other episodes that people wrote were also really funny. But there are some just, like, objectively offensive things that are just did not age well.
Mm-hmm. Man hands, that's one of them right there.
The way Jerry treats his girlfriend, like, every girlfriend on that show is just, like, so devoid of any humanity. Like, it's just,
well, he always finds a problem. George are both huge fuck boys. Like, yeah. George, mm-hmm. first of all, George was so excited when Susan died. Like, that was fucked up.
Yeah.
I think about Susan dying every time I lick an envelope.
Well, the story behind that was they had trouble with the actress. I like did some research, the history about Seinfeld and my watching of it. But mm-hmm. the actress, they joked about her dying as, like, her character. And then Larry David was like, we should just do that. We can get rid of her. And then they did it. But, like, it was, there's, like, so much, like, backstory that was really interesting to me. But I will say, now that it's over, I will miss having, like, that 90s time capsule where, like, mm-hmm. I can, like, look at this, the clothing and the sets and whatever. Like, it was really fun to at least, like, especially, like, back in March when everything was, like, ablaze. I was just, I need to just pretend I'm not in this time right now. So that was nice. But, yeah, there are some stuff, like, about race that are kind of bad. About a lot of fatphobic comments are, like, very of the norm.
The 90s, man.
Yeah. Yeah.
Didn't I mean, well. Dark now, time. Though, like, I, as a theater person, I actually see a lot of live theater. Well, not now, but I saw a lot of live theater. And, like, my mom and I, that was our thing that we would do. That was our little date once a month. Yeah. So we had a subscription to a theater in Los Angeles. And then when I started working selling subscriptions, my mom was always, like, one of my first sales. She'd be like, I want to support you. And so she would buy, like, one of the lower end subscriptions mm-hmm. to the theater. Because she's like, I cannot be subscribed. Subscribe to like 7 theaters. I do not have the time and I do not have the money, but yeah. I want to support you. So I went with somebody else for this one because she was like, I don't feel well or I'm busy or some, there was some reason my mom couldn't go with me, but I went to go see Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, the musical. And I ran into a friend there who's also plus size. And I call myself fat. I don't like to call other people fat without knowing what their relationship to that word is because it's so loaded. Yeah. And like a lot of people have complicated relationships with it. But so this friend is also plus size. And we ran into each other at intermission. And this was after the whole Augustus Gloop situation. And like his song is just them making fun of him and his mom being fat. And it's like, he deserved to die because he was fat.
Right.
And so at intermission, we were like, huh. A lot of fat phobia, huh? And she was like, yeah, yeah. Like me and her boyfriend and my friend were all like, that was uncomfortable because mm-hmm. it wasn't just that it happened. It was that everyone else was chill with it. And they right. were raucously laughing. And just as somebody who is pretty visibly plus size, I mean, there's a large spectrum, there's a large spectrum of sizes, and I'm not at the like extreme end on one side, but I'm also not the extreme end on the other side. I don't think anybody sees me and is like, that's a skinny person. So I was like, wow, do people feel that way about me? Like if I died mysteriously during a tour of a chocolate factory, would people read the news article and laugh?
Right.
Jesus. I mean, that is a funny unsettling. Way to die, kind of.
That's very unsettling to just to not only be aware that that didn't age well, but to see everyone else not realize that. You know what I mean? Like, yeah. It's just,
well, the musical's
so
new. That's the thing. They had
I
a
didn't
chance.
Know that.
Mm. Yeah, the musical is like a 21st century musical.
Wow.
There is a cell phone in it.
Wow.
Like, oh. It had every opportunity to not be that. And I'm not saying that they should write out the fact that Augustus Gloop is fat. I think fat representation is amazing. Yes, get it, Augustus.
But not have it be like the butt of a joke.
Yeah. Right.
Wow.
So it's also weird just because I don't know what culturally it's like in Syria or Iran or Syrian or Persian cultures, but like being bigger is not as bad in Ghana. And like when I lived in Ghana, I didn't feel fat and I didn't gain or lose a pound. It was just a plane ride that made me feel less fat as a teenager living in Ghana. And like boys liked me. I had like my first boyfriend in Ghana. And I was like, oh, I'm hot. Excuse me. Wait a second. No one told me. Like all these mics are not paying attention to what's going on right here. I mean, other women or other young women, girls were like, you're so pretty. But like, also I didn't believe them because they would say things about their own bodies that invalidated my body. Oh. So it was like, yes and no. Cause they'd be like, oh my God, I'm so fat. My calves are just like monstrous. It's like that scene in Mean Girls, you know?
Yeah.
Where
yeah.
It's like, oh, my pores are huge. My shoulders, all that stuff. So I was like, I hear you, but I also hear you when you don't hear yourself.
Yeah. Wow. I mean, that's a very, you're right. You did blow my mind. It's a very powerful sentiment and statement to just the only thing that changed was the plane ride kind of thing. Like American culture is so fat phobic and so it's not even just phobia. It's like this obsession with thinness and how thinness means health and how thinness means attractiveness. And I mean, it's really unfortunate, I think. And I want to get a quick commercial break before we get too into this, but we'll be right back. And we're back. Yeah, I'm going to be thinking about what you said before the break for a while.
I was really thinking about it. I was trying to like, in Iran, people are quick to comment. And I, you know, it's a lot of like immigrant cultures if you've gained weight. But I can't figure out if it's that. I don't know. I feel like Iran's kind of fat phobic as well in a way. But I don't know if that's just influence from Western culture.
Yeah.
I don't know, man. I'm like really, I kind of like zoned out after you said that. And I was like really thinking like, what is it exactly?
I can only speak for the Syrian culture as I know it. But as Anna said, like Middle Eastern culture, immigrant culture, very blunt. And they'll comment on your appearance right away, whether you've gained weight, whether you've lost weight. Like how big your belly has gotten, like what, like there's a word giddish that like you always talk about, like your uncle's giddish, which just means like basically his gut, and like that's just like something that you talk about, like. But it's so ironic because there's not an emphasis on health, like there or fitness in Middle Eastern culture.
Mm-hmm.
You don't see people fucking jogging. You don't see people, like, you know what I mean? Like no one works out really unless there's an agenda, it feels like.
Yeah, American fitness culture is bizarre.
It's extreme.
I don't want to make it seem also like Ghana is this perfect haven of body positivity. For sure, I'll have aunties who are like, hey, Krama, you like to eat, eh? So it's like, okay. Yeah, I get it. I gained 70 pounds since the last time you saw me when I was 8. Sure. But it didn't feel the same.
No.
It didn't feel like strangers wanted me to die because I was fat.
Yeah. And I think what's also, I think what's also interesting is that we're all in LA and or the industry and Hollywood in particular is so obsessed with thinness and just that is already like another element that fucks you up as a, like pursuing what you want to pursue and like realizing, like, I don't know. I think.
No, I agree with that.
Yeah. I think it's a mixture of everything. And it's ironic because if you're raised Muslim or like just conservative or just being Middle Eastern in general, and you're a girl and like you're taught to cover up your body or whatever, or you're taught to not be comfortable with your body, not even on purpose. That's just the way it works. But and then you hear comments about, oh my God, her body is so beautiful. Oh my God, she carries herself well. Look at, like, you know what I mean? Like, there is a certain like ideal with like this hourglass or like this fullness, I feel like, in Middle Eastern culture, but you're not taught to be that because it's like you can't put, you know what I mean? It's so ironic to me because you're raised to be shameful and then you grow up and you're like, look at her being so confident, like all these comments that you hear and you're like, why can't I be that confident? Then you realize that all this, you know what I mean? Like it's just like this cycle. It doesn't make any sense to me. I don't know, man.
It is a vicious cycle.
It is. And I just had another thought that, like, you were saying, like, Middle East women are, you know, you're supposed to cover up as much. Your body is sexualized in a way that it's like, oh, she's sewing some leg. Like, uh-oh, who is this? She's so risque. But, like, I remember whenever I went to Iran growing up, like, my whole life, and the last time I was there in 2017, because I haven't been able to go back, but, like, I remember being told, oh, if you lived here, you would already be married off. And I'd be like, what? Why? And my cousin was like, because your last name. Like, it's like your family holds more weight than like what you look like. So like if someone was like, well, I want to marry into that family, I would have already been shipped off because I'm a Hosnier and like been married off. And it's like, I have no like, you know, it's not like some guy's like, I don't know, like I'm not into her. He just would take me. This is so fucked up. I'm like really, really digesting it right now. It's like, it doesn't even matter how I feel about myself. Cause in the end, it's like, you're going to get married off because it's actually more currency for these two families to be married into each other. So it's like so many levels of like culture and like,
yeah. And I think colorism is a big thing too. Like if you have light eyes, if you have light hair, light skin, you're, and you can look, you can be whatever weight, and you would still be, I think, a lot of people would prefer that over, like, a skinny, like, dark person, which is so fucked up. You know what I mean? Like, there's so much colorism and fat phobia. Like, I don't know. There's so much there.
You want to hear something fucked up about Ghana? So, in Ghana, if you are biracial, they will call you half-caste. That's still a term that they use. Whoa. Like, caste, what? Like, castes. Like, the system caste of systems. Castes. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, that's a thing. Gosh. Like my grandma looked at a picture of my sister, and my sister's lighter than me. We have different moms, same dad, but my sister is lighter than me. And my grandma, who is not her grandma, looked and she was like, oh, is it half caste? And first of all, she said it, not she, which might be a linguistic thing because in Ghana, the language that my grandma primarily speaks, they don't have gender pronouns for people. So
honestly,
I think,
preferred, but yeah.
Right. It makes things a lot easier. Although I do get misgendered by people a lot, which is really funny. And it's not because of what I look like or anything. It's just because my grandma and like people who speak Ghana sometimes are like, what is the word in English?
The thing.
But she said half caste. And I'm like, grandma, you can't say that. That's a fucked up term. I didn't say fucked up because she's my grandma. But I was like, granny, you can't say that. It's not cool. Like, we don't say half caste.
Damn.
But in Ghana, they still do. Like, and I said it when I was living there and I didn't think about where it came from. Like, I knew about the caste system. We learned about the caste system in school in Ghana, learned it was bad, and then still called people half caste to their face.
Wow. I mean, that's just, you know, with time, you have to like educate yourself because we have people who still say like horribly shitty, like, you know, I can't even think of anything off the top of my head, but like people stay.
I had a friend in college who was like, oh, is mulatto bad? And I was like,
yes,
yeah, Mike.
That's a word that I think about all the time because people still use that.
Yeah.
Like,
this was 2012. Mm-hmm. And I was like, yeah, his name is obviously not Mike. They're all just Mikes now.
Yeah.
But I was like, yeah, no, Mike, that's bad. Don't say that. And he was like, well, like, I can't say like her beautiful mulatto skin. And I was like, you cannot. Please stop. Don't say it. Don't
Mike.
Do it.
God damn it, Mike.
Yeah. Well, that Mike has grown and learned a lot since then.
I hope so.
I mean, up until a few years ago, my dad would describe, like, he'll be like, oh, well, my Oriental friend. And I'd be like, oh, my God.
Oriental. That's a word. But no. But it's a word that a lot of immigrants don't realize is bad. Like, not a lot of non-Asian immigrants
will use
that word.
Over and over, I was like, you can't. That's a dated term. It's offensive. Don't use it. I mean, like, he doesn't use it anymore. But for a while, he'd be like, what do you mean?
Well, okay,
that's where he's from. And you're like,
I don't know about Persian, the language, like the Farsi language. But in Arabic, Oriental, like, it's like, they're not just saying an English version of that word. It's actually an Arabic word. So in my, like, I feel like I give my parents the benefit of the doubt sometimes because they might just be saying an Arabic word and think it's like, okay.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. But yeah, they're just like, I don't think a lot of immigrants realize how offensive certain things are, but
Noi.
We're going to have to bring you back and just really get into body positivity and immigration shit, because the conversation just starts to get interesting. That sounded like it wasn't interesting before, but you know what I mean. Like, this is
finally kicked it off. But actually, before we go, I do want to talk about your podcast, Popcorn Book Club. Yes.
Well, I was actually going to bring it up because of Mulatto.
Uh-huh.
So we're reading books. So the premise of the podcast is we read books that have screen adaptations. Some of them are more recent. Like, we read Lovecraft Country, which was very interesting. And I had a lot of mixed feelings about it because the book was written by a white man, which a lot of people don't know.
I didn't know that.
Lovecraft. Yeah,
the show has been created by primarily Black people. So Misha Green and Jordan Peele, also J.J. Abrams, but he's less, I think, on board, involved, and like hands-on. And we recently read, what's it called? Brave New World, which got real racist very fast. And I kind of was just like, it's interesting because people are like, oh, I loved that book in high school. And I didn't read it in high school. This is my first time. And it's interesting to see the ways that people who don't have to engage with that stuff kind of block it out.
Mm-hmm.
So, because I was talking to my friend Mike, who actually is named Mike, about that. And I was like, oh, I read this book for the podcast. And he was like, oh, I love that book in high school. And I was like, why? It's like about eugenics, and not like in a eugenics is bad way. It's like, well, maybe eugenics is fine. And it like says the word Negro on page 9. And it's like not like, oh, I am a Negro, or I am not your Negro, or anything that's like empowering. But it's talking about how Negro eggs yield more babies, and like the hypersexualization of Black women again. And it uses the term octoroon.
I mean, Huxley is a lot of white men's like wet dream, you know what
it's
I mean?
Like,
he is lauded. He is lauded as this like figure. And
I hated that book. I was like, yo, read 1984 instead. Like, that's
what I felt like. I was like, this is like a bad 1984. This doesn't have a main character. Like, everything about this book is a mess. The show is a bigger mess, which is hard to believe. Yeah, it's on
Peacock. What's the show called?
It's called Brave New World. It's on
Peacock.
I didn't
know there was a fucking show.
That's because it's on Peacock.
Also,
it's premium. It's not good. No, it's not good. But I'm really lucky that I am the only Black woman on the podcast, but I'm really lucky that everybody there is willing to listen to me and like hear me when I'm talking about, like, this made me uncomfortable for a lot of reasons. They're like, oh shit, I didn't think about that. And I'm like, yeah, you wouldn't. And they're like, yeah, I wouldn't. And we get to have very productive conversations. And with Lovecraft Country, that came up a lot. And we read The Hate U Give, and we got to interview Angie Thomas. She's great. She's amazing.
That's so good to hear. I mean, not that I would expect anything differently, but it is always comforting to hear that, like, good people are good.
We had a great conversation about mac and cheese. And, like, I grew up here with immigrant parents, but, like, kind of the thing, like, I'm not ethnically ambiguous in the way that people mean it, but when people see me, they don't see my ethnicity. They see my race, and they make up assumptions because I'm here about what my ethnicity is. They're like, oh, you are a Black American. And I'm like, I am, because I'm Black and I grew up in America for the most part. But also, I have this whole other culture and ethnic upbringing that isn't something that people see when they look at me. So I always kind of felt I felt in between both. Where it's like, I don't feel fully Black American, and I don't feel fully Ghanaian. And when I'm in Ghana, people call me an Obroni, which means white person. So and it also means foreigner. Like, it's
probably means like a whitewashed. Like, that's like their version of saying like you're Americanized. Or
yeah,
something.
Basically. Exactly. Somebody called me an Obroni on the radio once when I worked at a radio station. And I was like, oh no.
Wow. I mean, I'm going to be thinking, you said this sentence that is so wise. When people look at you, they see your race, not your ethnicity. Because, like, that is so true. I think I said this in an episode before, but humans are like visual creatures to a fault. They'll just see what they see, and then they're just like go from there. But you are ethnically ambiguous, and like in our eyes, you know what I mean. There's so much more to someone than just what you see when you look at them, their color of their skin, you know what I mean? And I think people are learning that, especially with the with Black Lives Matter taking like more of a lead this year, like realizing mm-hmm. not everyone is African American, you know what I mean? Like that some people right. are black. And like, I think
people that term also, yeah. like people use it as a shield because they're like scared to say black because mm-hmm. of the way that language is. And like everything black in language is bad. There's the black plague. And like you talk about like, oh, I was good in a evil. Dark period. Mm-hmm. I went yeah. back to black. Shout out to Amy Winehouse. May she rest uh-huh. in peace. But like there's this thing where black is bad. So to call somebody black feels naughty and feels bad and feels insulting. But it's like, no, I am black. And I don't really identify with African American as a general term, which is funny yeah. because I very specifically am from Africa and from America. But I like identify more with Ghanaian American and black. Mm-hmm. And like, those are all things that I'll call myself. But it's like super weird. Do you have for me to share one really quick story?
Yes.
Yeah, please.
Okay. So when I was in high school, in boarding school, I went to one of our, I went to all girls boarding school. I don't think I ever said that. But we went to one of the boy boarding schools for a conference called Take the Lead. And it was super cool, actually. So shout out to Woodbury Forest School for doing this. Then I think they're still kind of shitty and they're in Charlottesville, so questions. But they did this thing called Take the Lead where we talked about sexism and we talked about racism. And we did this activity called the Wall of Success. And there was this wall across the stage. We were like in a theater and I was like, ah, home, smell it. And so everybody started on the same edge of the stage and we were all trying to walk to the opposite wall. And so it was like, take a step forward. If the statement applies to you, take a step back. If the statement applies to you. And one of the, and so like, basically it was to show visually how privilege affects you. And one of the questions was, take a step back if your ancestors were enslaved or were slaves. I think they said were slaves. And so every other black person in the room took a step back. And some white people who I presume were probably like Jewish took a step back. And one of them looked at me like, hey, we're supposed to step back now. And I'm like, this is very uncomfortable for me in this yeah. moment. Because my ancestors weren't enslaved. And I think that there is a big difference because if you believe in generational trauma, like that can't be denied. And there are mm-hmm. people who, there's this movement called the ADOS movement. I don't know if you've heard of it, but it's a movement to recognize the differences between American descendants of slaves versus other black people. And so again, the ethnicity versus race thing. Mm-hmm. And I have some issues with the ADOS movement because like it's very anti-immigrant in a lot of ways. And obviously, I am very pro-immigrant because that's how I got here. It's like very interesting. That moment sticks with me. And that happened uh-huh. probably like 15 years ago. And I think about yeah. it all the time. And it was a white guy who looked at me like, hey, girl, we're supposed to step back now.
Wait, really?
No, he had also stepped back.
Oh.
So like he was like, hey, no. Did you hear? Like he looked at me like that. Nobody said anything because we were all very like somber. But I was like, ooh,
yeah, that's a moment you'll never forget. Yeah, but that assumption is pretty, you know what I mean? Like, that
was rough.
It was
a rough moment.
Damn. I mean, I also think of that, the assumption African American when someone is like from Haiti, they're Haitian American, but they get called African American, yeah,
or Jamaican, or anything really, like any other, like. You can be black and not be from Africa. You know what I mean?
Yeah, you can be
like,
from Guyana or any number of places in South America. Like, that completely erases Afro-Latino people. Mm-hmm. So, like, it's just, blackness is a very wide range of locations that it could have started from, including Africa, but not exclusive to Africa. And like somebody called Idris Elba African-American once, and I'm like, wrong, he is British.
Wow, that is shameful.
Like in 1775, maybe.
Yeah. Well, okay, Karama, this has been a joy. I'm not kidding when you should come back and we should get in a deep dive about so many interesting topics. But until then, where can our listeners follow you? Where can they listen to Popcorn Book Club? Tell us all the deets.
So you can follow me at Karama Drama on Twitter, on Instagram. I tweet more than I Instagram. I don't love Instagram because I'm just like, is my face right? But you can follow me there and look at my face and tell me if it's right. And you can listen to Popcorn Book Club on iHeartRadio or anywhere that podcasts are listened to. And let me know what you think. Reading's great. You should do it. But also you don't have to read. And I didn't read the last book. I read part of it. I didn't finish it. I'm the bad one.
But I mean, nowadays you can listen to books. Like there's no excuse to not.
I tried to listen to the audiobook of that particular book too. And I was just like, no, I hate this. I hate this so much. And I talk about it in the episode, but I was just like, I didn't want to spend any more of my time on this book because I despised it. And I'm going to watch the movie. So, you know.
What was the book?
I always watch the movie. It was Rebecca by Daphne Du Maurier.
Oh, I don't know.
Everybody White on the podcast was like, I am familiar with this text. And I was like, I am not.
Yeah, so, never heard of it.
I don't know. It's really interesting to see what white people know and what I don't.
Yeah, that dilemma has come in my life, my entire existence, really.
Yeah.
But yeah, we'll get into it next time for sure.
Yes, thank you so much for having me, and I can't wait to come back in the future.
Yeah.
You must.
We're looking forward to it already, but I'm going to wrap us out. You've been a joy. This is Ethnically Ambiguous, Ethnically Ambig, AMBIG on Instagram, Ethnically Amb, AMB on Twitter. I'm Shireen, it's Shirohiro on Instagram, and Shirohiro666 on Twitter.
And I'm at Anna Hosni on Twitter.
And yeah, until next time, read a book.
Yeah, read a book. Or don't if it sucks.
Don't if it sucks.
Ethnically Ambiguous is a production of iHeartRadio. For more podcasts from iHeartRadio, visit the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to your favorite shows.